polishing the pulpit and other places. I know at least two families who are on vacation, and Terry and Pat Persley are on vacation, and Bob and Darlene Doak are on vacation, and maybe others that I'm not aware of right now. Anyway, this book of Proverbs, okay, if you don't have a book, we've got a couple back there on the back table, or in a box beside it, and you pick that up. If you didn't bring one with you this morning, you can pick up one, borrow it back there, and leave it again if you don't mind. But we're going to be following this for about the next 13 weeks or so. Some of you have seen this before, this book before in the other adult class. But we decided to use it anyway. A little bit changed from what we have been doing. But pondering precious proverbs. This author is pretty good with a lot of things that he has written through the ages. I think Jimmy told me the other day that he passed away a couple of years ago. I was not aware of that. But anyway, we will be following this. Proverbs. What is a proverb? Anybody got a definition? Can you help me with that? Okay, a wise saying, a wisdom, knowledge, good. That's a pretty good assessment. How does that compare with, say, all scriptures written, given us by inspiration, right? And so this is given us to by inspiration. Is a proverb the same as God's comment about something that he's going to do? What I'm after is, it's a proverb. I'll give you an example, for instance. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. Truth? Proverb? Do you know of any children who have gone astray? See, my point is, see, when God says this is going to happen, it happens, right? We've seen it over and over and over, all through the Bible. But a proverb, you know, you train up a child, and what David Nashley is trying to do a good job, and other parents here are trying to do a good job with their girls to train them up. That's what we're trying to do on Sunday night with the little kids, train them and educate them so that when they grow up, they've got a foundation. But what happens sometimes when they grow up? Influences of the world, friends that they select, they marry someone who maybe wasn't raised in the church, that type of thing. And there's other influences that sometimes draw people away. So a slightly different than a proverb. Another thing on proverb. How many of you here remember Sonny Reagan and Charlie Reagan? Used to be members of this congregation. You remember how, and Charlie led the singing a little bit here. Charlie had a wiry voice, but he loved to sing. But he had that little wiry voice. But he had something else. Anybody remember what it was when he was leading the singing? Edna, you remember how Charlie led that singing? Had a little snap in his wrist as he beat. You ever watch Sonny Reagan, his son, lead the singing? He had the same little snap in his wrist. He almost had no choice, right? His dad had trained him through those years as a young kid, and he developed the same sort of thing. A kind of proverb, train up a child and where you go, and he was old. But sometimes children, okay, so that proverb holds true most of the time, but it is not a promise from God that every child. How many of us, you know, we've raised two boys. They've gone in different directions. They had the same raising, the same influence. They were together with us all the time, and there's differences in the paths that they've taken. And I don't mean just in jobs and stuff like that. But so a proverb is something that is, like Jack said, it's a general truth. It's something that has become common knowledge. It's a familiar expression, recognized, maybe a byword, might be a synonym for it. A saying that is of profound truth that's cloaked. Now, Margaret, you asked for the first question this morning. So now I want to, did your mother ever raise you back in the late 80s when you were a little girl? I mean, the 1880s? Did your mother ever have a proverb that she raised you with? No? I'll tell you one my mother raised me with. Son, nothing good happens after 11 o'clock. You be home. Any of you ever heard that? I have looked back and wondered how many times did that keep me out of trouble? How many times did that prevent me from getting hit by a drunk out on the road on Friday night after a date? That one little proverb, if you would, that one little saying, I think a lot of us were raised with things like that with our parents, and we can probably go back and a lot of you shaking your head, you're remembering things that your parents told you like that, and they did for you from that standpoint. Solomon, wise man, what was it that Solomon asked God for? Wisdom. He asked for, that was brilliant, wasn't it? And what did God say about that? Because you've not asked for what? You didn't ask me for long life. You didn't ask me for riches. You didn't ask me for the life of your enemies. So God said, okay, since you didn't ask me all these, what will I do for you? What am I going to give you? All these things, riches and honor as well. Do we have any other promises like that or comments like that in the Bible that you can think of that apply to us, apply to our kids? How about, yeah, you got it. How about Ephesians 6 chapter verses 1 and 2? Ephesians 6 chapter 1 and 2, if you look at it. Children, obey your parents. Every one of us can say it, can we not? Children, obey your parents. In the Lord, parents who are trying to do the right thing, who are trying to lead you in the right way, for this is right. And how does it end up? Honor thy father. He tells Solomon, riches and honor. And if thou wilt walk in my ways and keep my statutes and my commandments, as thy father David did walk, then I will lengthen your days. He got riches, he got honor, and as long as he walked in the statutes and the commandments of God, God would lengthen his days. Look at Ephesians 6 chapter, verses 1 and 2. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, that it might be well with thee, and what? Thou mightest live long upon the earth. Wow. A promise. Millis? A 111 years old. Well, how many of us as parents would steer our kids in the wrong direction? We don't want to do that, do we? We want to give them good advice, don't we? We have learned by some mistakes that we've made, right? And we'd like to prevent them from falling off the bluff somewhere or running off a bridge that's broke, wouldn't we not? We've talked about this weekend a little bit. If our kids would listen to us, and sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, but at least get our advice, we could steer them away from a lot of, well, I'm spending a lot of time on this. Solomon was, yes, sir. All right, he's saying his training child, we need to show them how to do it, not tell them, but show them, lead them, give them something to follow that way. And I agree that they, you know, our kids are a lot more, and Gloria and I have talked about this several times with our kids, they're a lot more likely to follow our suggestions if we suggest it rather than say, you need to do this. You know, there's a way to do that. Solomon was wise. He was smart. God blessed him and God backed him. Yet at the same time, he made some bad choices. He was smart. He was intelligent. He was educated, talented. You know, sometimes Christians are that way. Talented, honest, sincere. And yet we make mistakes, don't we? Solomon did the same. Solomon's the foremost writer of the book of Proverbs, but he's not the only writer. But 1 Kings 4:31 through 34 tells us he did what? How many Proverbs did he write? 3,000 Proverbs. And his songs were 1,005. It amazes me that God put in the book, Solomon wrote 1,005, not around 1,000, but exact number. That's amazing to me. Anyway, so we're still in the introduction, and we're eating up a lot of time here. But Proverbs is an important thing for us to look at. We can learn a lot from it. Unfortunately, Solomon did not always follow his own good advice, did he? You know, we talked about some things. He loved many strange women, and a few things like that caused him to go astray at some point in his life. He turned away, and he clave unto these folks. You know, we also talked about a lot of times in 1 Corinthians, the 15th chapter, about evil companions and evil communications corrupt. You know, Solomon allowed himself to be steered away from some things like that, didn't he? That was unfortunate in his life. But anyway, the basis for the lesson here this morning is Proverbs, the 18th chapter, verse 24. A man that hath friends must show himself friendly. And there is a friend that sticketh closer than a brother. We want to look at some things in the lesson here this morning. What are friends for? What do friends do for you and me? What can a friend do for us? And what would we do without friends? You know, I look out here and a lot of times in the world and we hear I hear somebody committing suicide or something like this. And I'm thinking, what in the world? Whatever allowed that person to get that depressed and get that deep into whatever they were into? Wasn't there somebody there that could pull them up? Wasn't there somebody there that could help them? Wasn't there someone there that they could turn to? I don't know. So, but the value I think we'll see, and we have already seen, I believe, a friend sticketh closer than a brother. First part here on page 5. A friend sticketh closer than a brother. You know, those of us who've raised several kids, we realize our kids often, you know, that sometimes they have little fights and stuff like that, little skirmishes as they come along. Even if they grow up, a lot of times they're on different tracks. Like I mentioned our boys, they're on different tracks. They get along well, but you couldn't put them in the same house and let them live together, I don't think. I don't think Kevin could work for Scott, or Scott couldn't work for Kevin. It wouldn't make it. However, there are some families who are real, real tight and close. I was raised as a part of the Greer family. The other side of my family was the Campbell family. There were 18 brothers and sisters in that family. 18. And I don't recall any time in my life hearing a single one of them get upset and argue over something. My grandparents, who lived in Red Bank, right behind where the post office is there in Red Bank, They didn't have Social Security back then. They didn't have anything. The kids all pitched in and helped out with money and paid the rent on the house and paid the mortgage and all that. Some of them, one who's a doctor down in Texas, he sent $400 a month, I remember, up to support them. Some other people sent $25. Some others couldn't afford anything, but they'd bring eggs and bacon or something from the farm and stuff like that. I don't ever recall anybody in that family turning around saying, well, I sent $400. I did a lot more than you. It just wasn't there. They were very congenial, but that's kind of unusual, isn't it? We hear of a lot of families in this world who, for instance, at the death of someone else, and they start fighting over what's left and start, you know, even lawsuits and things like that. It gets pretty bad. A friend sticketh closer than a brother. Solomon's not suggesting that that it's always the case, but a friend that will stand in even when a brother does not. A lot of times, you know, how about us as Christians? Do we not stand in as friends, sometimes closer than a brother? We should, and I think we do. But I think you can see it in a lot of things in our life. A lot of times people can and depend on the church, and their family is not there to help. And that's sad, but that's one of those things that the church can do. What about Joseph and his brothers? Look what they did to him. We can understand some of the situation, I think, sometimes. Joseph's father, I think, his attitude toward Joseph and Benjamin is different, and maybe that fueled some of that fire. But still, look at what his brothers did to him. Sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver. Look at how the younger brother felt, how the older brother felt about his younger brother in Luke the 13th chapter, when the prodigal son comes home, and his brother won't even go into the feast. He's mad and stayed outside. He would not accept the fact that his brother had been lost and had come back. He was angry.
Why would it be a selfish attitude? Wouldn't that be kind of selfish? If older brother could look at that?
Would it be kind of selfish? Sure, I think so. I think to some extent we might even understand the older brother. Well, look, I've been here. I've served you all this time. You didn't make a big party for me. Sometimes we feel that way. I think sometimes at work we feel that way. We see things, people who are maybe promoted when maybe they shouldn't have been, or we think we deserve that promotion, or we deserve that accolade, and yet they get it, and maybe we feel that way. But, you know, how is it that we, you know, the Bible tells us to bear one another's burdens, Galatians 6:2, and so fulfill the law of Christ, but how should we feel as Christians when we see things that go great for somebody? Should we not rejoice with them? Sometimes it may be tough to do that, I think, you know. But at the same time, someone who has some good fortune, hey, that's wonderful. Steve? That's true. God forgave us. God was very helpful to us. So why would we not pass that on? Why would we be selfish from that standpoint and think we are the only ones that can do this? Look at what happened to Esau and Jacob. You know, and I know he took his birthright and his blessing and stuff like that in Genesis, the 27th chapter. Then, you know, you look at some of the things that happened to Paul through his ministry, and some of the people who came after him who were Jews that knew Paul and could have helped him out, but yet they took an unchristian attitude toward him, did they not? And Paul had to deal with that. Let me move on a little bit. Item number two, a friend loveth at all times. Proverbs 17:17. A friend loveth at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. We've already talked about how kids go separate ways sometimes, but a friend is there at all times. How is it that a friend sticks with you through adversity and loveth at all times? Give me an example of that that's happened in your life, maybe. Okay, a friend is somebody you can depend on. They're always going to be there. Phil? Say it again now. Yeah, we're going to talk about that in just a little bit. A friend. Yeah, that's true. Tom?
You heard the expression,
yeah, that's true. A friend loveth at all times. And we've seen this in several ways. Love is key because what? Corinthians 13 tells us love never does what? Never fails. You know, love suffereth long. And one thing I thought about on that, love does suffereth long. It's not something that's just quickly passing and stuff like that. But, you know, even there, the Bible doesn't tell us that love must suffer forever. Okay? I think we can see that where maybe in things in our life where, you know, we need to be willing to suffer through some things. But there may be a point in our life where we say, wait a minute, enough's enough here. Bible didn't say you just that you had to be foolish. Bible tells us not to be revengeful. Tells us to give them our cloak also. But it doesn't say you've got to turn around and just give everything. The Bible doesn't say you just got to turn around and just submit to everything that happens to you with folks. Sometimes we need to be smart about what we're doing. And there's a point at which we need to, you know, even though we've suffered long, there's a point at which maybe we can say, hey, look, there's enough of this. A friend loves when we're wrong. A friend does not broadcast you're wrong. You know, if Gloria and I have a spat or something like that, you may not know about it. We'll still sit beside one another and worship, but you may not know about it. Grady, what are you grinning about? I think we've all probably been experienced that at some point in time. Maybe we had a spat with our wife or with our husband, and at the same time, you know, we don't come in here, and I don't come in here and tell Grady, you know what Gloria did to me last night. You know what she said. I don't come and tell Shirley, hey, Shirley, you know, you need to go talk to Gloria because a friend doesn't do that. A friend will take care of that by themselves and let that go. Galatians 6:1-2. Yes, sir. No, you're not going to have a closer friend than your mate. No, you should not. And of course, when you go look at the line that the Bible draws about divorce, what is the basic line there that's drawn? That loss of trust, right? that loss of loyalty. That's where it's at. And of course, you know, you know as well that for other people, there's things that go on that a friend where you, I don't know, where you depend on a friend that way that's close, and if they let you down, you're hurt. You're really devastated if a friend lets you down. And maybe that's happened to you in your life, maybe it hasn't. But you put a lot of trust in a friend, and that trust is a good thing. Galatians 6, 1 and 2, along that line of love and trust and helping a friend. Brethren, if a man be overtaken in what? A fault or a trespass, ye who are spiritual do what? Restore such a one in the spirit of meekness and gentleness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. Bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. A brother's fault or trespass should not cause total annihilation. If so, then who's going to restore him? If it causes annihilation, who's going to help restore? We have to be there to help pick somebody back up. Okay, page 7. A friend is a source of strength. And this is what Phil was talking about a minute ago, a little bit. We know the story about David and Goliath. And here's David with his sling, and he drops Goliath, and all the people start, wow, this is wonderful. Who got jealous over all that? Saul. Saul got jealous because David's getting all these accolades, you know, and Saul's not getting any. So Saul got upset with him. And Saul goes out and, you know, the people want to raise David up as king, but Saul wants to kill him. And who was his friend? Who was the source of his strength? Jonathan. And look at the things that Jonathan did. I mean, even when Saul was searching after David to try to kill him, Jonathan would find David. He knew where he was. And David knew he could trust him, didn't he? They were close friends. It was a source of strength to David. You know, we think about David a lot of times. The author brings out in lesson that David was strong. I mean, look, he had killed a lion. He had done all of these things. David is really a strong, powerful man. But look, David got depressed at times, did he not? David wasn't feeling so good about being sought after and having to sleep in caves and places like that. That wasn't a lot of fun. Here comes his friend to help him out, give him some strength. You know, one of the things that has puzzled me a little bit sometimes, I'll see you all here on Wednesday night, Sunday night, and Wednesday night. A lot of people don't come back on Sunday night and Wednesday night. And yet the strength that we have from that we draw from one another here is important. And I think people miss that a lot of times. It's when I go to Louisville congregation, they make us feel just like we're at home. They make us feel good. I mean, it's a wonderful thing to go to visit. And I look at that strength that we get from that. I look at the strength that I like picking on Margaret. She's it's fun. Pardon? Oh yeah. I enjoy being here and being around you folks. There are many times, particularly I can remember on, like, back when I was doing that stuff you do, doing Monday through Friday. We call it, what? Work, yeah. There have been many a Wednesday night that I was just absolutely exhausted, absolutely wiped out, just running on nerves, just barely putting one foot in front of the other. And go to church services, be around fellow Christians. I don't believe I've ever left when I wasn't lifted up some. Because of you all, because of Christians, because of the source of strength that I got from friends. And when we're not here, we miss that. We miss that camaraderie. We miss that handshake. We miss that chance to poke at Margaret, you know, that type of thing. It's a good thing. It's an enjoyable thing. It's a community that we draw a lot of strength from it. How about you? Have you had a similar experience in your life? Do you see that? Do you feel that too? I think we all do. Did I miss something? It should be. He's saying if we go somewhere else where people don't know us, maybe we don't have that camaraderie, but we should. You know, that's a failure of a lot of that's one thing I appreciate about the North Hamilton congregation. We do a pretty good job of making sure that visitors feel welcome. And that's just an important thing because we don't know who those visitors are. We don't know the circumstances that brought them here, but we not only do we want them to come back, we want to encourage them. We want to strengthen them. But I'm like Millis, you know, I've been some places where I walk in and walk out. And I never will forget a congregation we were at in Birmingham one time. They put big red stickers on you for visitors and blue stickers if you're a member. And then you stand up and you shake hands with the people around you and stuff like that as services begin. And welcome our visitors here and so forth. So I'd go out and stand in the foyer after services, stand there with my big red sticker on. And people would avoid you like you had the plague, like you had leprosy or something. They could be walking that way and just didn't want to say hi to you. I thought, man, how sad, Millis. Yeah. Sometimes it's hard to get people to feel comfortable, but still, we can work at it. Okay, let's move on here a little bit. We do need to be selective about our friends and look forward to things here. And I think a lot of times people miss that opportunity. Let's go to page 8. A friend is one who will share good things with you. Acts 10, it talks about Cornelius. And some of the things that Cornelius did. What is one of the things that the Bible talks about Cornelius doing there? Remember about he was told, go send to Joppa, and he will tell thee words whereby thou and all our house shall be saved. But what did Cornelius do? He did what then? Friends and family. He sure did. Kinsmen and friends. He went out and gathered these folks. Hey, you got to come listen to this. Hey, folks, you need to come pick up on this. This is a good thing. And, you know, that was a marvelous thing that he did. We don't know how many people of his kinsmen and his friends may have also been converted because of his action that way. A friend will share good things with you. Let me ask you another question along this line. If something good happens to you, what do you do with it? Your car breaks down or something like that, and you find a good mechanic. What do you do about it? You share that information, don't you? You tell Travis, hey, Travis, you tell other people about it. If it's a good deal, you pass that information on. Matter of fact, sometimes if it's not a good deal, what do? Pass that on too. But when I was working at Savannah River, you know, Jimmy and I've talked about this, there were thousands of mechanics down there. When I first got down there, there was 24,000 people down there on site. You could walk out in the shop and ask a mechanic, hey, where's the best place for me to go get a front-end alignment on my car? And those mechanics would tell you just that right quick, don't go here, don't go here. But this guy over here does a good job, and he's fair in price. And so far, and I used that several times, never disappointed, never was disappointed. Those guys were exactly right on it because they had passed that information on. A friend shares good things. Number five, a friend is one who comforts us in time of trouble. You know, a lot of us have had things happen in our life, times of trouble, maybe death in the family. Maybe that's the most significant. But there may be other things. An injury, someone who's very sick, a house that burns down. There's a lot of things like that that happen, and the things that a friend can do that way. You know, he gives the example of Lazarus and dying and Mary and Martha and all the friends in the area who came to comfort them. And Jesus came also for that very same purpose. You know, sometimes comforting is one of those things that we don't know how to handle that sometimes. But, you know, I've often thought that just being there a lot of times is a lot of comfort. When you see that there's your Christian friends are around you, they don't always have to be right there, right in your face, but you know they're right there in the shadow. You know you can depend on them. You know you can trust them. How many of you ladies during a fellowship meal here leave your purse in here with your credit cards and your checkbook and your money? You know, why do we do that? We trust people, don't we? We trust people in this congregation. I remember last time Gloria left her purse right over here. It had everything in it. She didn't worry about it. I think that's a good thing. A friend is someone who comforts us in time of trouble. Maybe just the fact that we are there would help. We're about to run out of time. A friend is one who warns us of the dangers that are before us. Acts 20, verse 29 and 30, Paul was warning about what? Coming into the congregation. Grievous wolves who would speak perverse things and draw disciples away from them. A lot of times that's one of those things we have to pay attention to. But a friend is one who warns us of dangers. If Gloria and I were in a bad wreck in 1995, we were on the interstate down around Dalton, Georgia. And we drove into a wall of water where you just could not see. It was dry here and just raining cats and dogs right there. We did not know, but there had been a wreck 3 miles down the interstate that blocked all the lanes. And all three lanes of traffic were backed up right to that edge of that water. I had already slowed down to 55 miles an hour on the interstate now. Got ready, settled in my seat, got settled, had my wipers on, had my lights on, I was ready for the rain, and I walked in that wall of water and no place to go. All three lanes were blocked, people off in the medium, people off on the side, and we collided with some. If I had anybody come up the interstate and just flashed their lights, I would have thought, well, I wonder what's up ahead. If they'd given me a warning. How about the warning that we need to give to our friends and family? Somewhere, somehow, life's not forever. Life's going to end someday. There's a warning that we need to pass on. Tom?
Thank you.
Sure, friends are not perfect. Sometimes friends disappoint us, and we can handle, but we need to handle that. That's true. A friend is not a yes person. A friend, Paul told Timothy to reprove, rebuke, and exhort in long suffering with the doctrine. Now, he put those things together for him to think about. What have we learned about a friend? A friend is important to us. What would you do without friends? What kind of life would you have without friends? What kind of congregation would this be without friends? Thank you very much. Lesson 2 next week.